Rescue the Rescuer, the show that focuses on helping first responders who may be experiencing challenges such as addiction, PTSD, relationship failure, and more. Stories of struggle and recovery to highlight successful survival strategies for those in this powerfully stressful field of work. And now, here's your host, Stephen Kowalkiewicz.
Hi everyone, thanks for joining me. I'm a former paramedic who lost everything due to my struggles with childhood trauma, job-related stresses, and substance abuse. Now in recovery, I created the only show in the world with you in mind. All right, thanks again for joining me, and let's get started with today's show. Welcome back, everybody, to another great episode of the Rescue the Rescuer show. And I am really, really excited to have a very, very, very special guest on the show today. We connected a few weeks ago, and we're finally getting a chance to do this. And I'm excited to talk about what he's doing and talk about his show and the projects he's working on. So without further ado, I'll let him do the rest. I'd like to invite Guy McPherson on the show, the Trauma Therapist Project. What's going on, Guy?
Stephen, man, thanks so much for having me here. It's an honor to be on your podcast.
It's an honor to have you, and I'm glad it's nice to have a fellow podcaster on, because you know the game, really.
Right.
it's a lot of fun, and in preparation for the show, I've actually been listening to a few of your episodes, and one that I really, really enjoyed was the one, I guess you published it on Christmas, I believe. It was Dr. Gabor Mate out of Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, like, that, you know, I don't, obviously this show we talk about everything, but when it comes to addiction, trauma, underlying causes, I think that guy is like the father of it, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he's just amazing. I remember the first time I encountered him, I was at one of my pre-doc internships, and they were showing a video of him, and just the way he spoke, it was just so, you know, real, no BS, and I just connected with that. I was like, whoa, who is this guy? And that's what he's like. He's amazing. Yeah.
And you know, so soft-spoken, like, you know, he's sought out around the world. Everybody, you know, everybody wants to get a chance to talk to him, but he doesn't seem, at least from what I can tell from watching his videos and listening to him talk, he just doesn't have this air of ego or arrogance. It's really about trying to help everybody he can.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's one of the things that really attracted me to him. He's talking all over the place. I just saw that he's on Tim Ferriss's podcast, this most recent episode. But he's all over the place, and I think justifiably so. His message is so clear and resonant, and you know, he's talking about trauma and its link, if not cause, of addiction. You know, and that's pretty serious.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why I think it's so important to really address that on this show. Cause I know, you know, that a lot of my audience here is first responders or first responders families, or even retired guys who used to work in the field. And I know that when I was in the field, the commonality was everybody would go out drinking. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. And I doubt you would say there's anything in and of itself wrong with drinking. However, if you're using things like drinking or gambling or promiscuous sex or whatever it is to escape, then that's where the problem comes in.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, when things, I like to think of things in terms of a continuum, right? On one side, maybe on the left side, or in the middle, things are kind of balanced. But as soon as things start moving over and tipping over that scale, if you will, and become imbalanced, you know, when your daily life becomes impacted, when things start shifting and changing and you start covering behaviors and behaviors start to shift dramatically, yeah, then you've got to start taking a look at what's going on there, and then it becomes a problem.
Yeah, I mean, and another thing I know for most people is if you don't start addressing it or becoming aware that it needs to be addressed, the problem either gets worse or it manifests itself in other places.
Certainly I'm not an addiction expert, but you know, when it comes to addiction, that's one of the magic questions, right? When is one able to address that issue and look at that issue and realize that something is not right?
Yeah. And right now, especially with the events that we just saw transpire last week in Florida, not only obviously the people that were immediately affected, the students, the faculty at that school, but we also have to start looking at and thinking about the first responders and the bystanders that are going to be affected. Now, granted, that's their job, right? So when something bad goes on, you know, obviously 911 is called and people show up. But I think it's time to really start spotlighting the question about what's going on with, how does that affect people? How does that affect you from seeing that kind of stuff day in and day out?
Right, right. You know, you kind of cut out there for a little bit right after you said the first responders, that's their job to look at that stuff. I kind of missed your question there.
Well, I guess, yeah, the question would be when do we have to start looking at how that's affecting the responders, the major trauma that we're seeing? We're not nowadays, like the caliber of tragedy that's happening is becoming larger in scale.
Well, I think, yeah, then that's a great question. And my response would be it's understanding first and foremost that it's inherent in the job, you know, and that people, that we as humans are going to be affected by it. Not everyone's going to develop PTSD, certainly, but people will be impacted by it. And of course, you know, when you're talking about first responders or even in other communities, a lot of other communities, the military community, I was thinking of the police force, they could be deemed first responders as well. There's an attitude of, well, you know, it's not going to affect me. It's not going to impact me. But I think more and more people are starting to understand that it's a reality. You know, and I think if you go into that with that understanding, then you're able to, from the get-go, start to develop ways to manage it and handle it, right? You have support systems there. You're able to speak about it without feeling shame or embarrassed. That's a tough, I think, mountain to climb. You know, we're talking about stigma, right?
Right. And I think stigma is just another word for discrimination, really.
Say more about that.
Well, I think we throw, you know, the word stigma, especially when it comes to mental health, gets thrown around. But I think it's relevant to say that it's paralleled with the word discrimination, because, right. And I'm not saying that happens where there's laws broken necessarily, like in the workplace, but and it does happen sometimes. But just let's just say, give an example, like. Let's take this example in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. So you have all these first responders that saw all these, you know, these poor young people that wound up dead and injured. Now, what happens when everybody's banded together to go and the adrenaline's going and everybody's on the fight, you know, on the rescue mission? What happens later when everybody goes home and one of those responders is having a hard time with it? Right. Now, I know, and I say that because it happened to me. There were certain calls I remember back in 2007 I was a paramedic in Atlantic City, and I went to a shooting. It was actually a suicide on Valentine's Day. It was a 23-year-old police officer shot himself after a shift, and that call really affected me. Mm-hmm. And I went outside. I was restocking the truck, and my partner, who had been a medic for a long time, came out to me, and he saw me crying. And he said, man, if you're going to cry over stuff like that, you just have no business doing this job. That's where the word discrimination comes in.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. And there's a difference between, you know, the ability to feel the emotion and to understand that that's natural, it's human. And then there's, you know, when and if that gets in the way of your work, and it happens with people in the mental health field too. It always does. You know, when I was seeing clients, I was working in a clinic for the last 5 years. I recently stopped, but I was seeing clients at that time and kids, you know, we were seeing young kids. And I remember when my mom died suddenly, so a couple of years ago, and I took some time off, and I was devastated. I took some time off, and then I said, all right, I'm ready to go back. I'm good. I can go back to work. Right. And then I started seeing a client, and this client started talking about someone who in their family who died. And Stephen, man, everything just came rushing, flooding back to me. My whole body was like consumed with this, stress, this cortisol. And I was like, I said to myself, I can't do this. I need to get out. And it's knowing that, you know, when that happens, you've it's time to take a break. But it's, you know, we're human beings, right? And we're going to be impacted. Everyone's going to have a different reaction to these things. And I think that's another important thing too, that people have different reactions. You know, what's traumatizing for you may not be traumatizing for me, and vice versa. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand. You know, well, bullying. Oh, come on, it's, you know, it's kids will be kids. Well, it jacks some people up depending on what's going on, and it affects or impacts the trajectory of their lives. You know.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. We have to start recognizing that people are affected by, all right. So the old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. We've heard that since we were kids. Right.
Right.
I think that statement is nonsense because it's not true.
Of course it is. Yeah, right. On the far end of that, again, that continuum, that's called verbal abuse, you know, and that can and most often does have a really severe impact on people. I was interviewing this very seasoned therapist, and they said, you know, in terms of trauma, if you're not affected by it, something's wrong. You know, and that's not to say that you're completely incapacitated or it's interfering with your work, but these stories that people are telling you, and in your case, you know, in these events or scenes that you encounter, they're going to impact you. They have to impact you, and if they don't, something's wrong. But again, that's not saying, you know, you're going to be completely disabled or incapacitated, but just as a human being, right? We feel, we have emotions.
And it's so, and the message I think in that is it's okay. Like there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And
right. And then where one of the places that things get sticky is when you look in the case of the military, where in order, well, of course, in first responders, I would imagine too, in order to do your job, you have to develop some ability to, in a healthy way, right, shield yourself, right, which allows you to do your job. But that doesn't mean you don't feel. And I think in a lot of ways, those that becomes muddied, right? People completely push away the feelings, and that doesn't go away, right? Your body feels it. Trauma affects the body, impacts the body. It's not just your head. It impacts the body.
Talk to me a little bit more about that, because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have done research. I mean, there's been a lot of research lately on how trauma affects the brain neurobiologically and impacts the body. There's one well-known clinician, researcher, Peter Levine, whose famous book, Waking the Tiger, talks about how he was looking at how trauma impacts animals. And animals who like were attacked, if they weren't able to run away, that trauma of being attacked stayed in their body. It was like charged in their body. But if they were able to run away, they were able to kind of purge themselves of that trauma, and they were able to escape, to run. And similarly, when we as human beings, we go into this fight or flight or submit mode, if we're being attacked and we're, you know, think of a little kid, if they're on the ground, they're not able to get away, that traumatization of being attacked stays in your body, and it has to come out in a certain way. And oftentimes we see, and this is a very simplistic and generalized way of describing this, but oftentimes it will show its way in depression or anxiety, and it becomes undiagnosed, can become undiagnosed traumatization or post-traumatic stress disorder. And similarly with people too. You know, when people come back from war, my brother came back from special forces with PTSD, and you don't, you know, it's kind of like the unseen scar in a sense, right? The unseen scar, people don't see it, but it remains in the body. And how do you manage that? How do people manage that? Well, they manage it by covering it up with substance abuse or spending or doing all different types of behavior. But and the part of trauma that trauma therapists work with is helping the individual release that from their body, in a sense, working through that. On a cognitive state or cognitive level, and also on a body or somatic level.
Wow. You know, you just really made me think about something. So I've been divorced about 5 years, and I have two children with my ex-wife. My son is 9. So he was about 4 years old around that time when me and her, you know, when we separated. And there was a lot of turmoil at that point. I was losing jobs. We were financially unstable because I was a mess, you know, with substance abuse and just making all kinds of like terrible decisions and, you know, bad behavior. So around that time, he's about, like I said, about three, four years old when everything starts going bad, he started biting his nails. And he's been doing it ever since, and he doesn't do it all the time. And it's interesting because my ex-wife and I have him in counseling now because he's been starting to ask some questions about the divorce. He's just going through some of those issues that are now starting to affect him. Right. We were at the counselor like a week or two ago, and she noticed about his nail biting, and she said, "Do you do this all the time?" And he was like, "Well, only when I'm nervous or anxious." And then she said, "Well, when did you start doing it?" And he said, "Well, you know, around," he remembers he started it around when he was at that younger age. And that's when things were bad. Now, he didn't know what was going on because he was young. He didn't really know. But kids, you know, kids can sense that.
Right. Well, right. He didn't know cognitively, but kids pick up, people pick up what's going on, the turmoil in the environment, you know, whether they're in the other room, they sense that, they feel that. And oftentimes, you know, that can manifest itself in different behaviors. And it, again, I don't know specifically the situation, but these things, depending upon the severity of it, they play out. You know, they play out.
Well, and what's interesting is the lady, the therapist, asked my ex-wife, because she noticed that whenever he bites his nails in the room, like he's in a therapist room, he's uncomfortable, he's anxious, he's nervous, he's a little worried. So he does it a lot. He does that behavior. And she sees my ex-wife correcting him, stop doing that, stop doing that, stop doing that. And the lady said to him, you know, how do you feel when your mom corrects you for that? He said, it makes me feel bad. And then she said, well, what does it make you want to do? He said, it makes me want to do it more. Mm-hmm. Because for some, you know, so like if you link that up, that's his self-soothing coping mechanism that makes him feel like, you know, a little bit more grounded and a little bit, you know, okay. You know, he feels okay. When someone corrects him and he feels worse because they're correcting him and he feel, you know, he interprets that as he's bad or he's not good. He wants to do it more. Now draw the parallel with like an adult who, when you start telling them their behavior is bad, you don't realize you're doing that to somebody, but they're internalizing that as shame. And what do? They continue the behavior and sometimes it gets worse.
Right. Yeah. That word shame is a big one, you know, and obviously it comes up a lot with trauma. I mean, one of the things I think that's great about what you're addressing here, Stephen, on your podcast is this issue, this problem, this lack of self-awareness around this topic is systemic. It's cultural, you know, and I think in part, in large part, what you're doing is kind of shining a light on it in a sense, you know, for your community. I mean, that's pretty powerful.
Well, it is. I know what my silence did to me. I know what the things that I wanted to share, because I've always been somebody who always, you know, I was always sharing things, maybe not, you know, sometimes sharing too much with people, but I was always that person. But when I would, you know, for instance, I share this a lot on my show in different interviews and when I speak to people, when I was a medic, I would go on calls with medics. We would go on overdose calls. And I remember working with people that would say, oh man, I'm sick and tired of saving these junkies. And I remember thinking in my head at that moment, oh man, that gave me the signal that I can't talk about what's going on with me because I'm that junkie because I just stole pills from somebody's house.
Right.
And it kept me having to suffer in silence and isolation. And I know what it did to me. It almost killed me. And yeah. Because of that, if I can help somebody, you know, not take that road and recognize that it's okay to speak up. It's okay to find somebody. It's okay to not be okay.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that's important for all of us to remember and people to hear is that when, again, I'm not an addiction expert, so I don't speak from that position, but I have had certain amount of experience, you know, dealing with kids and trauma and early psychosis. When people are starting to conduct certain behaviors or self-soothe in certain ways that, you know, cutting or addictive behaviors, something's off. Something is there. Something needs to be looked at, right? And within that person's environment, within that person's life. And that's not easy. That's not an easy shift to make, you know, and it's very easy for someone on the outside to say, oh, you know, that person's an addict or that person is addicted to X, Y, or Z substance, or they're a cutter, or for example. But there's oftentimes, and Gabor Mate speaks to this a lot, something is going on. There's a reason for that. Right? Something, and it might not be from yesterday. It might be from, you know, years ago.
Right.
And that's very important to understand. There's a reason why things happen. And I'm not saying it's always easy to see, but 99.9% of the time it comes back. to that. There's a, can I share a small story?
Please do.
When I was working with these kids, this is one of the impetuses for why I started my own podcast. When I was working with these kids, one of the jobs that we had to do was to take calls, you know, from teachers or parents, referral calls. And so you'd get these parents and teachers calling or other therapists calling and talking about their kid. Maybe the kid was 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and they were exhibiting signs of early psychosis. Maybe they were hearing things or seeing things or slightly paranoid. You know, these symptoms had newly developed. There was a decrease in academic functioning or social functioning. But Stephen, 99% of the times, there was trauma. You know, this stuff doesn't come out of nowhere. It just doesn't, you know, and you'd get this, at the end of this call, you'd have this phone screen, you'd have this piece of paper with all these symptoms. And again, inevitably, there was this trauma that had happened, whether it was physical abuse or sexual abuse or bullying, or they'd been exposed to some violent situation. And then a week later, in walks this kid, and it's a kid. It's this, you know, it's this... it's this quote unquote normal looking kid that all this shit had happened to them. And so my point is that, you know, it's easy to look at the manifestation of that, you know, maybe the addictive behavior or the cutting or whatever. But what we have to remember is they got that this is happening because of something. And there's empathy, I think, needs to play a role in this. You know, these people, I'm thinking about these particular kids I was seeing, you know, they're not bad kids. They're not awful students. You know, stuff went on in their lives that's led to this in a sense.
Well, you know, I posted something on Facebook and Instagram yesterday, and it was a picture of an iceberg. And underneath the surface, you see the words fear, broken home, grief, mental illness, abuse, low self-esteem, insecurity. Above the surface, you see liar, junkie, isolation, right. Drunk, mess, promiscuous.
Yeah.
It's the issue is never the issue.
That's exactly it. And there, yeah, and you know, also, I don't know if you said this, but loneliness, you know, is down there too on the bottom of the iceberg, you know.
Oh, of course,
all those things, yeah. I like to think of things on a continuum in a sense, it starts with, you know, feeling left out or not good enough, or you know, from my own experience, I was bullied as a kid, man, and I didn't realize how that just impacted the arc of my life in terms of self-esteem and professional choices and schooling choices and all these different things, you know? So I've come to understand that things happened to me. I've made certain choices because of certain things. And I'm trying to, you know, each day trying to, you know, get back on course, you know, just make small corrections and with myself and the choices I'm making. So.
Sure. And the same here, you know, before we get into what you're doing to combat all this, I feel led to say this. This may sound controversial, and I certainly don't want to get into a gun control debate with you or anybody, but I keep thinking about the incident that just happened, and that's not to take away the tragedies that have happened prior to, but this is the one that just happened, so it's in the forefront of our minds. I think about the kid. You know, granted, you know, punishment, accountability for actions is necessary, I believe. But I think about this kid. I mean, it's been pretty well publicized that he came from a pretty screwed up life situation.
Right.
Is it any wonder?
No, it's not. You know, again, this stuff just doesn't come out of nowhere, which isn't to equate mental health issues with violence.
No, but, of course not.
But right. It's not, and it's obviously it's not to condone what he did, which was horrific and tragic. But yeah, you know, you read about him and he had a very difficult, traumatic upbringing. He was very close to his mom. His mom died, you know, foster homes and so forth. And you know, people will say, well, is that to justify? No, it's not to justify. But you look at what are the elements that could possibly have contributed to this kid's sense of self, to this kid's sense of self-esteem or whatever. Again, you know, this just doesn't come out of nowhere.
No. And even to end it on, to end this actual little part of the conversation on this, I think about that there's that thing that's floated around, you know, the social media world, the little meme out there that says Cain killed Abel with a rock. It wasn't about what he did, what the weapon or the behavior. It was about the condition of Cain, you know. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like the condition of this kid or the condition of whoever causes whatever atrocity they cause. Why? We got to stop asking what and start asking why.
Yeah, it's a great question, you know, and it's such a big one too. And a lot of times I think we as a society are looking at the behavior. I mean, with school too, you know, with kids are acting out, it's so easy to look at that behavior. But once you look behind the scenes and you find out what's causing that behavior, things can begin to march toward the healing process.
I agree. And with that said, it's a good segue to get into what is the Trauma Therapist Project? What is it? What are you doing?
What am I doing? I started this when I was in graduate school, and I had been doing one of my pre-doc internships, and I was seeing clients, and from the get-go I knew I was interested in helping people who'd been impacted by trauma. And I was doing a lot of commuting. I was seeing clients, and I was always like, you know, worrying about my clients, wondering, you know, what the hell am I doing with my clients? I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. And simultaneously, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts just about entrepreneurs being interviewed and just doing these kind of incredible things with their lives. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be awesome if I had like a mentor sitting beside me who could help me with my clients. And then I thought, what if I did a podcast, you know? And I had never done anything like this before. I had no, you know, business background, but I thought it would be cool to start interviewing, you know, seasoned clinicians who knew a lot about trauma, who could help people like me who were just kind of getting into this field. And that kind of led to the actual, my work, you know, with the Trauma Therapist Project, which was to kind of raise the awareness of trauma and help newer clinicians get into this field, because it's trauma in the mental health field, in a sense, is kind of like the hot potato. You know, a lot of people kind of know it's there, but there's a lot of people who don't want to touch it because it's freaky, it's scary, it's messy. But
yeah,
and one of the reasons why is because it affects us. You know, it impacts us when you're listening to these stories. You know, similarly with yourself, when you were going on these calls, you see this stuff, you know? So anyway, I put together this, the Trauma Therapist Project, and then the podcast to help support and educate, inspire people who are just clinicians, trauma workers, therapists, counselors, whatever, who are just kind of starting out on getting trauma informed.
Man, I love it. I love it. I know I'm a fan of the show. I've been listening to multiple episodes, and I just love that there's guys like yourself out there that are taking your wheelhouse, taking what you know, and, you know, trying to reach people on a larger scale, because that's the cool thing. I think we talked about this the first time we actually talked, like last week or 2 weeks ago when we scheduled this, that it's really cool that if you want to be a voice, if you want to be heard, you can be. Right. You actually, mm-hmm. like, you really can be with, you know, you don't have to have a recording contract to be a famous singer now. And I'm not saying necessarily that's your goal to be quote unquote famous, nor is it mine, but you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to get a contract from, you know, RCA or somebody to be able to do this. You can just do this.
Yeah. It's so true, you know, and I think for me, the important, what's happening for me is I think I'm learning to really more and more express myself, to trust who I am, you know, and that's not always an easy process too, when you're doing something like this, but that's the part that excites me. You know, I was interviewing someone the other day and I just felt, and I'm sure you get this feeling too, you just feel, whoa, this is it. I'm psyched. I love it. You know, I'm doing what I should be doing, you know, and just, and being able to help other people is all the better.
Well, and on top of that, one thing I have definitely learned in my life, and I do believe it's true for all of us, when we actually find out what our purpose in life is, there's nobody going to stop us from succeeding with it. And whatever success is, whatever that's defined for the person, but no one's going to stop us except for us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You know, as we're talking, you said you had been listening to some of the podcasts. One of the ones that I want to recommend to you, because I think this gentleman speaks to a lot of what we're talking about. His name is Peter Bernstein, and I think it's episode 93 or something. But you can just search it. I think he's from the East Coast as well.
Okay.
He's from Jersey, and he just talks a lot about kind of getting down, getting rid of all the BS, and really getting to a point where he was able to kind of honor who he was and himself. So anyway, but I just appreciate, you know, you giving me the opportunity to share on this. I think there's a lot of overlap about what we're doing in terms of you know, mental health and addiction and podcasting as well.
Absolutely. And with that being said, this has been a really awesome conversation, and I think we're just about out of time, but I want to give you like the opportunity to let everybody know how to find you, how to find, find your show, and any other last words of wisdom or advice that you have for the audience.
Definitely. People can reach me at thetraumatherapistproject.com. They can access my podcasts. I also have a membership site for new trauma workers called Trauma Therapist 2.0. People can shoot me an email through that site. I mean, in terms of final words, I would say kind of honor, you know, oneself. Being able to do that has been, and of course, it's a journey for me, but being able to do that has taken some time, honestly, but it's a place where I think I'm feeling more and more excited about it, and kind of holding up the mirror to ourselves and owning who we are, owning our past, the great parts about it, and maybe the parts that need a little polishing and some work too. So
I love it. I love it. Everybody go out there, subscribe to the Trauma Therapist podcast, find him, you know, give him a nice review, listen to the show. He's got some great guests on there, and he's got, on a side note, he's got a really soothing voice. So it makes me feel, so give him, you were kind of, I think you were part of what your purpose in life was, to be able to have a show like this, because you have a very, you have a way of giving, putting people at ease, and that's
appreciate that. Means a lot.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. So with that said, this has been another awesome episode of the Rescue the Rescuer show. Remember, you're not alone. Speak up.
Thanks for listening to Rescue the Rescuer. For show notes and more, head on over to rescuetherescuer.com.
We
We are a part of the mentalhealthnewsradionetwork.com.
Thanks for listening. I really hope it'll help you or those that you care about most. In addition to the show, I'm currently booking speaking engagements and taking on private and commercial clients for coaching and consulting. Come to rescuetherescuer.com for my email and social media contact. See how I can help you personally. Remember, you are not alone in your struggle. Speak up and be heard.